matter of weeks. According to the Daily Star, the plans are robust and comprise Apache helicopters, warships, tornadoes, and Eurofighter jets based in Cyprus. British Prime Minister David Cameron had declared his support in principle for British units together with French, Italian, and American troops marching into Tripoli to stabilize and secure the city. Such a mission has long been secretly prepared. In mid-March, the Italian government, which has been pressing for a war in Libya for some time, confirmed similar plans. Italy was to lead a UN mission with up to 6,000 soldiers, which would be supported by airstrikes from the Sicilian air bases of Trapani and Sigonella. Western agents and special forces have been in Libya for some time to train and arm militias, and armed drones have already been flying out of Sigonella. The German government, which withheld its support in 2011 for the NATO bombardment of Libya, is also preparing a military intervention. Defense Minister Ursula von der Leyen, Christian Democrats, made clear in January in reference to the installation of the unity government in Libya and the struggle against IS in Libya. Germany will not be able to evade its responsibility to make a contribution there. After the Luxembourg meeting, she stated that it was now decisive that Libya itself formulates the type of assistance it requires. What the German government understands by assistance was made clear in an interview with Wolfgang Ischinger, the head of the Munich Security Conference, MSC, in Monday's edition of Die Welt. According to Ischinger, who for the first time last week held a core group meeting of the MSC in Africa's capital, Addis Ababa, Germany ought to have joined the Libya mission 5 years ago. The bombardment that destroyed the society, killed tens of thousands, and turned millions into refugees was not wrong, but necessary. However, they had forgotten to think about the day after, and to use just as much energy to stabilize the country. Ischinger gave free rein to his dream of a new and comprehensive German policy of colonial occupation. Africa was not a troop training ground, and the military intervention could only be the first step. Steps 2 and 3 are much more important and difficult because we have to use more resources for them. It requires people to take care of justice and the police, to maintain the administration and order, promote rebuilding and growth. He added, "The crises in Africa are the places where we can show what we have learnt from our mistakes. In particular, that one requires comprehensive concepts for the overcoming of crises, and for that, one cannot take half measures." Ischinger left no doubt about what he meant by this. Referring to a question from Die Welt on whether Europe would have to fight, he said, "Who else? We can no longer rely on the U.S. Sixth Fleet to regulate the problems for us. Obama has repeated that America is no longer running around with a fire extinguisher and providing security around the world. An emancipation of European security policy in the sense of a forward-looking and independent policy of crisis prevention and fighting to realize its own interests is therefore unavoidable." A glance at the numerous foreign policy strategy papers prepared in Berlin in recent years reveals what these own interests are, and on what traditions the German elite, which already fantasized about a hegemonic position in Africa under the Kaiser, is drawing. Germany's entry into the new scramble for Africa has been planned for some time, and is part of Germany's return to an aggressive imperialist foreign policy. The guidelines for an Africa policy, adopted by the German government early in 2014, refer to the growing relevance of Africa for Germany and Europe, which, among other things, arises out of the increasingly dynamic economy and the rich natural resources of the continent. Therefore, the German government intended to target the strengthening of Germany's engagement in Africa politically, in security policy, and economic policy, act early, quickly, decisively, and substantially, and deploy the entire range of available resources across government departments. Thank you. Also today on the World Socialist website, NATO-Russia meetings resume amid fears of military clash in Europe. It's reached a point where we had to stand up to them, and we are. Striking Verizon workers speak out in Maryland, Pennsylvania, and New York. Low-level officials face indictment in Flint lead poisoning crisis. New York cop convicted of killing a Kai Gurley receives no prison time. 7 dead, hundreds homeless in Houston, Texas flood. University of California, Davis pays $175,000 to erase pepper spraying incident from internet. Death toll rises in Ecuador earthquake. 2 right-wing candidates to contest second round in Peru's presidential vote. U.S. threatens harsh sanctions if North Korea conducts nuclear test. Australian media demands austerity offensive via double dissolution election. UK Leave and Remain campaigns seek to exploit fears over future of National Health Service. Dramatic rise in poverty among German retirees. German Vice Chancellor praises the hangman of Cairo. And, UK, thousands march in Leeds to oppose attacks on National Health Service. You can find all this and more today on the World Socialist website, WSWS.org. This has been Joseph Santolan for the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.
Music should be free. So should radio. This is Ian from Fugazi, and this is Radio Free Santa Cruz. Music should be free. So should radio.
And stared down at the river moving but clear to the bottom of dark rocks. We wondered, can we go back and to what? In the hills of the lower Atlas, 7 years ago, you pointed to a tall shepherd racing along the crest of a green hill, and then there were 4, and they came down, stood before us, dirty, green-eyed Berbers, their faces open and laughing. One took my hand and stroked the soft white palm with fingers as brown and hard as wood. The sun was beginning to drop below the peaks, and I said, Fez, and they answered in a language we hadn't heard before. Fez, and with gestures of a man swimming, one told us to double back, and we would find a bridge. We left them, standing together in their long robes, waving and laughing, and went on to Fez, Meknes, Tetuan, Ceuta, Spain, Paris, here. I have been lost since, wandering in a bombed-out American city among strangers who meant me no harm, moving from the bars to the streets and coming home alone to talk to no one or myself until the first light broke the sky and I could sleep a moment and waken in the world we made and will never call ours, to waken to the smell of bourbon and sweat and another day with no bridge, no old city cupped carefully in a bowl of mountains, no one to take this hand, the 5 perfect fingers of the soul, and hold it as one holds a blue egg found in tall grasses, and smile, and say something that means nothing, that means you are, and you are home.
The Lisa Smith Wengler Center for the Arts at Pepperdine University presents an exceptional mix of unique, innovative, and diverse performances from September through April each year. The final show of the Center for the Arts season is internationally award-winning South African singer, songwriter, and activist Johnny Clegg, who brings his infectious and vibrant blend of Western pop and African Zulu rhythms to the intimate Smothers Theater on Saturday, April 23rd at 8 p.m. Discover exceptional performing arts programming for all tastes and ages with the Lisa Smith Wengler Center for the Arts in Malibu. For further information, visit kpfk.org. or call 310-506-4522. That's 310-506-4522. KPFK is a proud media sponsor.
This is KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara.
Coming up next, Informativo Pacifica.
A continuación, Informativo Pacifica.
No te la pierdas.
Because we are the 99%.
I am really concerned about the conduct of the voting process in New York State.
Reportan numerosas irregularidades en las primarias de Nueva York, donde Hillary Clinton y Donald Trump logran la victoria.
Ellos lo que pretenden es seguir haciendo negocios a costa del agua, de la tierra, de la biodiversidad. Y nos están diciendo, si nosotros nos movemos, los vamos a reprimir, los podemos incluso hasta matar.
Advierten pueblos indígenas en el Estado de México que ley que permite el uso de armas de fuego contra manifestantes podría ser impuesta en todo el país.
Y le decimos al presidente Macri que esta pelea no se dé a partir de ahora hasta que se abra la paritaria y reincorporemos a los trabajadores en todos los organismos, campamento, asamblea, ocupación, permanencia.
Nueva protesta nacional contra el gobierno de Mauricio Macri en Argentina, cuyas políticas neoliberales están beneficiando a su familia y aliados. El canciller iraní Mohammad Javad Zarif alerta sobre posible ataque de Estados Unidos a su país. A continuación, detalles de estas y otras noticias en esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Te saluda Fernando Velázquez. Quédate con nosotros. Haremos comienzo a esta edición del Informativo Pacífica con un segmento de notas breves preparado por Norma Martínez.
A 4 días del terremoto de 7.8 grados que sacudió la costa de Ecuador, un sismo de 6.1 grados se sintió el miércoles generando pánico entre rescatistas que trabajan en edificios destruidos. Según expertos, desde el sábado han ocurrido unas 500 réplicas. El presidente Rafael Correa actualizó el miércoles la cifra de víctimas.
525 fallecidos, 163 desaparecidos, 5.733, que dice aquí, heridos. Ok, la cifra actualizada. Pero esta está cambiando minuto a minuto. La cifra de fallecidos, lastimosamente, aumentarán, pero cada vez a un ritmo menor, ¿no? Porque ya se han rescatado muchos cadáveres, ¿no?
Se informa que en las zonas más afectadas el daño en vialidades está dificultando la distribución de ayuda, generando malestar entre los damnificados. El presidente ecuatoriano calculó en unos 3.000 millones de dólares los daños materiales provocados por el sismo. Medio millar de refugiados podrían haberse ahogado cuando un barco se hundió en el mar Mediterráneo entre Libia e Italia la semana pasada. Así lo estimó el miércoles el alto comisionado de las Naciones Unidas para los Refugiados, conocido por sus siglas como ACNUR. La información se dio a conocer cuando un equipo de representantes de ACNUR entrevistó a los 41 sobrevivientes de la tragedia, entre ellos 3 mujeres y un niño que fueron rescatados el 16 de abril y llevados a la localidad griega de Kalamata. ACNUR reiteró su llamado a los gobiernos europeos para que faciliten las vías legales y seguras para que refugiados y migrantes lleguen al viejo continente. Sin embargo, Europa y Estados Unidos continúan cerrando sus fronteras a los miles de refugiados de los conflictos militares que ellos han fomentado. El Fondo de Naciones Unidas para la Infancia, UNICEF, condenó el secuestro de unos 100 niños en el oeste de Etiopía durante un ataque de presuntos ladrones de ganado del Sudán del Sur. Como resultado del asalto, casi 200 personas perdieron la vida, según las autoridades locales. En conferencia de prensa en Ginebra, el portavoz de UNICEF aseguró que la agencia se suma al llamado del gobierno de Etiopía a la liberación inmediata de los niños.
Cualquier ataque contra niños, cualquiera que sea la razón o el contexto, es una violación de los derechos humanos y un atentado contra la humanidad.
En Estados Unidos, en medio de numerosas irregularidades, la demócrata Hillary Clinton y el republicano Donald Trump se impusieron en las primarias del estado de Nueva York. Clinton obtuvo el 58% de los votos, acumulando 139 delegados más, mientras Bernie Sanders obtuvo 42% del sufragio y 106 delegados. Entre los republicanos, Trump se llevó el 60% de los votos y 89 delegados, seguido por el gobernador de Ohio, John Kasich, con 25% de los sufragios, y el senador Rafael Edward Cruz, 14%.
I am really concerned about the conduct of the voting process in New York State, and I hope.
El senador Bernie Sanders, quien ganó 8 de las últimas 9 elecciones primarias demócratas, se quejó de las irregularidades ocurridas en el proceso del martes. En las primarias demócratas se denunciaron numerosas irregularidades. Tan solo en Brooklyn, donde nació Sanders, 125.000 personas fueron removidas de la lista de los votantes desde noviembre del 2015, sin aparente razón legítima. El propio alcalde Bill de Blasio reconoció que su oficina recibió numerosas denuncias de errores en las listas de votación, incluyendo los nombres de residentes de edificios y calles completas removidos de las listas, y ordenó una investigación. En Nueva York, a diferencia de otros estados, solo personas afiliadas al Partido Demócrata o Republicano pueden votar en las primarias para elegir candidatos a la presidencia, lo que dejó a millones de independientes que mayoritariamente simpatizan con Sanders sin posibilidades de apoyarlo. La Corte Suprema de Justicia de Estados Unidos dictaminó el miércoles que Irán debe pagar $2,000 millones con activos congelados en el país a víctimas y familiares de estadounidenses muertos en ataques de los que se acusa a la nación persa. El tribunal ratificó una ley federal aprobada en el 2012 por el Congreso sobre activos iraníes depositados en bancos estadounidenses. Por otro lado, The Intercept reportó que el gobierno Obama cabildea intensamente a las dos cámaras del Congreso para que no aprueben un proyecto legislativo que permitiría a familiares de las víctimas de los hechos del 11 de septiembre del 2001 demandar a Arabia Saudita por su responsabilidad en los ataques. El presidente de Estados Unidos, Barack Obama, llegó el miércoles a Arabia Saudita para reunirse con el rey de ese país, antes de iniciarse una cumbre con otros líderes árabes de monarquías en el Golfo Pérsico, enemigas de Irán. Mientras en Washington, la organización antiguerra Código Rosa protestó frente a la Casa Blanca para denunciar las ejecuciones y otras violaciones a los derechos humanos cometidas por Arabia Saudita. En particular, denuncian las ejecuciones sumarias que incluyen degollamientos de opositores políticos y manifestantes. En Los Ángeles, California, se convocó el miércoles a participar en una acción de solidaridad con los estudiantes de la preparatoria Santee, que lograron asignar un baño neutral para ser usado por alumnos de la comunidad LGBT. Se trata del primer baño de género neutral en un distrito escolar. El martes, un grupo de hombres adultos protestó afuera de la preparatoria y confrontó a los alumnos que defendieron a sus compañeros gay. Se informó que se produjeron insultos y golpes. El complejo de educación Santee está localizado en un barrio obrero del sur centro de la ciudad de Los Ángeles. La iniciativa del baño neutral fue impulsada por los propios estudiantes. El complejo de educación Santee está localizado en un barrio obrero del sur centro de la ciudad de Los Ángeles. En la ciudad de Nueva York continúa la sesión especial de la Asamblea General de la ONU sobre el tema de las drogas. En su turno, la ministra de Justicia de Cuba dijo que el problema de las drogas no se resolverá mientras se siga militarizando a los países ni con la legalización de las drogas, asumiendo que son sustancias inofensivas.
La ministra indicó que ese abordaje implicaría que los estados no están dispuestos a cumplir con sus obligaciones de combatir el delito y proteger la salud de los ciudadanos.
Por eso, Cuba no ofrece ese enfoque, que abre espacios de mayor peligro para la estabilidad de nuestras naciones y que puede incidir en otros crímenes transnacionales igualmente complejos.
La alta funcionaria instó a aplicar el principio de responsabilidad compartida para hacer frente a ese flagelo, el cual implica eliminar la demanda mayoritaria que proviene del norte y resolver así el problema de la producción y el tráfico desde el sur. Rocío Franco, Naciones Unidas, Nueva York.
Al menos 16 detenidos por presuntamente participar en la desaparición de los normalistas de Ayotzinapa han sufrido fuertes torturas a manos de autoridades mexicanas para obligarlos a inculparse. Así lo señaló la periodista Anabel Hernández, quien asegura la propia ONU ha llamado la atención del gobierno mexicano. Durante una entrevista en Radio Fórmula, la investigadora dijo que las torturas van desde golpes, asfixia, abusos sexuales y descargas eléctricas para que los detenidos se confiesen culpables. Señala que el propio exfiscal de México, Jesús Murillo Caram, habría ofrecido dinero a Sidronio Casarrubias, presunto líder del grupo criminal Guerreros Unidos y responsabilizado de la desaparición de los estudiantes, para que ratificara su confesión obtenida bajo tortura. El gobierno mexicano continúa defendiendo su llamada verdad histórica, asegurando que policías de Iguala entregaron al crimen organizado a los estudiantes, que los ejecutaron y quemaron en un basurero, aunque expertos nacionales y extranjeros consideran no existen pruebas científicas que sostengan esa versión. Líderes cubanos que derrocaron a la dictadura de Fulgencio Batista dejarán a nuevas generaciones la dirección del gobierno. Así se anunció en la clausura del séptimo congreso del Partido Comunista Cubano, donde se puso de límite los 60 y 70 años de edad para ocupar puestos de liderazgo.
Este séptimo congreso será el último dirigido por la generación histórica, la cual entregará a los pinos nuevos las banderas de la revolución y el socialismo.
El presidente Raúl Castro dijo confiar en que la juventud cubana continuará con los proyectos revolucionarios.
Con el orgullo del deber cumplido, convencida de que sabrán continuar y engrandecer la obra revolucionaria por la cual entregaron las mejores energías y la vida misma, varias jornadas de compatriotas.
Participantes en el Congreso señalaron que la juventud cubana no fallará a la responsabilidad que les deja el liderazgo revolucionario.
Uno de los principios que tiene nuestro partido es ese, unir a los pinos nuevos y a los pinos viejos. Y me parece que eso es lo que siempre se ha hecho y lo que va a seguir haciendo nuestro partido.
De ir empoderando a la juventud de nuestro país. Eso que tanto se habla y que alguna gente trata de infundir con temor, nosotros no tenemos ningún temor en ese sentido, no solo porque estamos los viejos, sino porque además tenemos una juventud como no la tiene ningún otro país del mundo, revolucionario, consciente.
El máximo líder de la revolución cubana, Fidel Castro, hizo una visita inesperada al Congreso.
Pronto deberé cumplir 90 años. Nunca se me había ocurrido tal idea y nunca fue fruto de un esfuerzo, fue capricho del azar. Pronto seré ya como todos los demás, a todos nos llegará nuestro turno, pero quedarán las ideas de los comunistas cubanos.
Ese segmento de Notas Breves fue elaborado por Norma Martínez. El gobierno de Mauricio Macri volvió a enfrentar un nuevo paro nacional de trabajadores y campesinos argentinos contra sus políticas de despidos masivos y aumento de los costos de la electricidad, el gas, el agua y el transporte, informan los compañeros del Foro Argentino de Radios Comunitarias, Farco.
Se cumplió en todo el país la jornada nacional de paro y movilización contra los despidos, el ajuste y los tarifazos. Hubo manifestaciones en todas las provincias donde estuvieron juntos los trabajadores estatales, las organizaciones sociales y cooperativas y también los movimientos campesinos. El secretario general de la Asociación de Trabajadores del Estado, Hugo Godoy, anunció que de ahora en más profundizarán el reclamo con protestas más fuertes en los ministerios. Esto decía en el acto realizado en la ciudad de Buenos Aires tras la movilización.
¡Y le decimos! A quien tenemos a nuestras espaldas, al presidente Macri, que esta pelea no cede a partir de ahora, hasta que se abra la paritaria y reincorporemos a los trabajadores en todos los organismos, campamento, asamblea, ocupación, permanencia, a pelear.
Y este acto en Buenos Aires se realizó luego de una larga marcha que realizaron las organizaciones sociales durante más de 10 kilómetros desde el barrio de Liniers hasta la Plaza de Mayo. Otra de las facetas importantes de la jornada de ayer fue el reclamo contra los despidos y el desmantelamiento de la Secretaría de Agricultura Familiar, el organismo estatal encargado de apoyar a los productores más pequeños. La protesta se sintió en todas las delegaciones de la Secretaría en el país y allí se pudo ver unidos a los trabajadores y a las organizaciones campesinas.
El canciller iraní Mohammad Javad Zarif alerta sobre posible ataque de Estados Unidos a su país. El oficial sostuvo el miércoles que Irán tiene el derecho legítimo de ampliar su capacidad de defensa para evitar que se haga realidad la amenaza ilegal y absurda de Estados Unidos de un ataque militar. Las declaraciones del diplomático se dan 12 días después de que el alto clérigo iraní Mohammad Emami Kachani denunciara que Estados Unidos sigue violando el acuerdo nuclear con Irán, pactado en julio de 2015 como parte del Plan Integral de Acción Conjunta. El político deploró el silencio de las instancias internacionales ante los crímenes de lesa humanidad cometidos por los agresores iraquíes contra los civiles en Irán durante 8 años de la guerra impuesta por Irak a Irán entre 1980 y 1988. Occidente no solo no hizo nada para evitar esto, sino que armó a Saddam con armas sofisticadas al tiempo que evitaba activamente que Irán pudiese satisfacer sus necesidades defensivas más rudimentarias. En otras noticias, un documental de RT en español ha sido premiado en la categoría política en el Festival de Nueva York. Se trata de Sumur, 40 años de resistencia, que se enfoca en el conflicto de Sahara Occidental, una antigua colonia española ocupada por Marruecos desde hace 4 décadas. El equipo de la corresponsalía española estuvo en los campamentos de refugiados saharauis, en pleno desierto, retratando las condiciones de los desplazados y también dando voz a aquellos que denuncian el incumplimiento de la legalidad internacional por parte de España y de Marruecos. Elena Villar Ortega es la autora del reporte especial sobre el pueblo saharaui.
Hace prácticamente un año que estuvimos en la zona y desde hace un año la situación no ha hecho más que empeorar. En el plano humanitario se han recortado esas ayudas a los campamentos de refugiados y también sufrieron unas terribles lluvias que en medio del desierto resultaron devastadoras para esas precarias viviendas. Eso en el plano humanitario. En el plano político se han producido hechos importantes durante este año. Uno de ellos, por ejemplo, la ruptura de relaciones entre Marruecos y las instituciones europeas después de que el Tribunal Europeo dictaminase como nulo un acuerdo comercial en el que se integraba el Sáhara Occidental, que a nivel de la justicia internacional no pertenece a Marruecos. Pues bien, a raíz de esa resolución, Marruecos ha decidido romper las relaciones con las instituciones de la Unión Europea. Otro de los hechos relevantes fue la expulsión hace muy poco de miembros de la misión especial de la ONU en el Sahara Occidental por parte de Marruecos, un hecho que no ocurría desde el año 91, desde que se desplegó esa misión especial en la zona. Y, por ejemplo, otro hecho relevante a destacar que sucedió este mismo mes fue la expulsión de una delegación de abogados españoles desplazados a Rabat que querían ver las condiciones en las que se encontraban algunos presos saharauis en una cárcel marroquí.
Estás escuchando el Informativo Pacífica.
Te invitamos a que te unas a nuestras redes sociales por Twitter en info-pacífica o por Facebook bajo el nombre de nuestro productor Fernando Velázquez e Informativo Pacífica. Escucha el noticiero cada día de lunes a viernes en Pueblos Sin Fronteras wordpress.com.
Pueblos indígenas del Estado de México anunciaron acciones legales y manifestaciones para frenar una ley que autoriza a la policía a usar armas de fuego contra manifestantes. Norma Martínez informa.
Agrupados en el colectivo Fuego de la Digna Resistencia, pueblos indígenas que defienden los bosques, el agua y sus tierras de los megaproyectos, anunciaron acciones para frenar una ley que autoriza a la policía a usar la fuerza letal contra manifestantes.
Vamos a unir nuestros brazos para luchar por nuestros derechos. Que nunca nos verán arrodillados, ni pidiéndole absolutamente nada. En cambio, vamos a devolver la dignidad y la tierra que han robado a nuestros pueblos y a nuestra patria.
La Ley de Regulación de la Fuerza Pública del Estado de México fue bautizada por sus opositores como Ley Erubiel, porque se trata de un proyecto del gobernador Erubiel Ávila. También se le llama Ley Atenco en referencia a la brutal represión policial que sufrió ese pueblo hace 10 años.
La Ley Erubiel lo que viene es a legalizar el uso de armas de fuego en contra de manifestaciones pacíficas que se realicen en el territorio mexiquense. La ilegalidad consiste, según la propia ley, en que si alguna protesta pacífica le exige a las autoridades algo, En ese momento cualquier policía puede accionar armas de fuego en contra de los manifestantes.
El abogado José Antonio Lara, del Centro de Derechos Humanos Ceferino Ladrillero, explica por qué la legislación debe ser derogada.
La segunda cosa muy preocupante es que el responsable de algún exceso policíaco o violación a derechos humanos únicamente serían los policías, a pesar de que respondan a órdenes de los altos mandos, concretamente gobernador o presidentes municipales.
Ricardo Obando, representante de la comunidad de Tecamac.
Hoy en día los megaproyectos de muerte están a la orden del día. Hay, por ejemplo, la intención de hacer carreteras de cuotas sobre bosques que son grandes productores de agua, como el caso de Xochicuautla. Tenemos el asunto del aeropuerto también en Atenco, que es un proyecto insustentable y que incluso ya lo han señalado antiguos funcionarios. Por ejemplo, José Luis Duque Camargo declaró hace algunas semanas que ese es un proyecto totalmente insustentable porque viene a romper la mecánica del suelo de lo que fue el antiguo lago de Texcoco. Y sin embargo, el afán del negocio es seguir construyendo. En el Estado de México hay procesos de urbanización salvaje en donde se urbanizan zonas forestales, zonas de recarga del acuífero, zonas agrícolas.
80 de los 125 municipios del Estado de México tienen un sistema comunitario de agua, pero el gobierno federal y estatal buscan privatizar el recurso. La comunidad de Tecamac defiende el sistema de agua comunitario. Ricardo Obando asegura que la ley Erubiel está destinada a reprimir a las comunidades en resistencia.
Hay un mensaje de parte del gobierno de que estos proyectos van y de que nosotros, aunque nos opongamos, pues viene el garrote, ¿no? Y nada menos que la ley Erubiel es precisamente ese garrote, ¿no? Porque ellos lo que pretenden es seguir haciendo negocios a costa del agua, de la tierra, de la biodiversidad. Y nos están diciendo, si nosotros nos movemos, los vamos a reprimir, los podemos incluso hasta matar.
El profesor César Neri anunció que el Magisterio Independiente del Estado de México se sumará a las acciones contra la ley Erubiel, que también puede ser usada contra el movimiento.
Erubiel Ávila Villegas tiene una clara vocación represiva, una clara vocación represiva que incluso la quiere llevar a legalizar esta forma de actuar. En ese sentido, el Magisterio Mexiquense, uno de los motivos para llegar a esta coordinación fue luchar contra la represión, y lo seguiremos haciendo. Entonces, las movilizaciones del Magisterio Mexiquense junto con los pueblos en resistencia van a seguir.
Ignacio del Valle, del Frente de los Pueblos en Defensa de la Tierra, recuerda que en mayo se cumplen 10 años de la violenta represión contra San Salvador Atenco, ordenada por el entonces gobernador Enrique Peña Nieto.
Desde luego que en este año se cumplen 10 años de la represión artera, cobarde, que hacen en contra de esta organización que tiene que ver con la defensa de la tierra, en contra de un megaproyecto para nosotros de muerte, que es la imposición de un aeropuerto.
En la conferencia de prensa del martes estuvieron también representantes de San Francisco Xochicuautla, que ha frenado legalmente la construcción de una autopista privada, y la comunidad otomí de San Francisco Magú, que se opone a un proyecto inmobiliario que destruiría cientos de hectáreas de bosques. Adela Romero es representante de San Salvador Atenco, comunidad que se opone a la construcción de un aeropuerto en sus tierras agrícolas.
Exigimos el respeto a nuestro territorio dentro de la ribera del lago de Texcoco. Exigimos respeto al marco legal. Exigimos respeto a la voluntad de nuestros pueblos en la construcción de su propio futuro. Exigimos la cancelación del proyecto aeroportuario. Exigimos la anulación de la ley Erubiel, que condena nuestra lucha y abre la puerta únicamente para justificar la represión.
La Comisión Nacional de los Derechos Humanos anunció que promoverá ante la Suprema Corte de Justicia de México una acción de inconstitucionalidad en contra de varios artículos de la ley Erubiel, pero los pueblos organizados temen que tomaría hasta un año para darse un fallo definitivo y podría antes ser usada contra ellos. Para el Informativo Pacífica, reportó Norma Martínez.
Alertan en Venezuela sobre la actuación paramilitar de la delincuencia organizada, una guerra que está en pleno desarrollo y una realidad que ha desatado el miedo en la población. El gobierno ya ha intervenido en algunos lugares en los que han encontrado campamentos de entrenamiento y los llamados cambuches paramilitares. Madeleine García reporta.
A simple vista es un cerro, como se le llama en Venezuela a los cinturones de miseria donde las políticas de la revolución penetraron hace 16 años barrio adentro para abrazar a los pobres. Detrás de estas fachadas han sido identificados por la inteligencia venezolana grupos delictivos que han adoptado prácticas paramilitares con influencia extranjera.
El trabajo de los paramilitares en Colombia hace 20 años y el trabajo de los mercenarios en Siria, Libia o Irak lo están haciendo y lo van a hacer las bandas criminales en Venezuela. Son los mercenarios del momento, con el mismo índice de violencia.
Yo quiero que graben a ese que está ahí, sí,
Nos adentramos al corazón de algunos de esos sectores. Hay ojos por todos lados que te siguen, los gariteros, que van avisando quién va subiendo, si hay algún carro extraño.
Yo no quiero, ¿quién? ¿Tú ya lo viste? Salgamos de aquí y vámonos.
Funcionarios policiales, militares han sido asesinados. Líderes políticos y de las bases sociales revolucionarias han sido amenazados y también asesinados, e incluso sus hijos, como el de esta mujer.
En la noche, según el forense, lo mataron, pero ya estaba todo torturado. Quitaron las uñas, eso estaba todo golpeado. Lo conseguimos amarrado en las manos, amarrado a los pies y con la capucha puesta. Me imagino que le preguntaban quizás por mí.
Se mantiene firme en sus convicciones, pero con terror.
Ya la gente no quiere, la gente está asustada, porque aparte de eso, para estar ahorita en el socialismo o en el chavismo, hay que tener bastante guáramo y estar preparado para lo que venga.
Está ocurriendo el elemento en los desplazados urbanos. El liderazgo social y político de algunas comunidades está siendo amenazado de muerte y los compatriotas, ante el miedo a morir, toman su enseres y se van y dejan abandonado el territorio.
El objetivo es desmovilizar a las bases del chavismo, que se han organizado en consejos comunales.
Hi, I'm Jody Paulson from What They Don't Tell You, and you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM or freakradio.org.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song.
And welcome to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We're going to kind of fade out on the usual intro because today, which is April 21st, 2016, this pre-recorded show is going to be a long flashback, a complete replay of the June 21st, 2000 show, 16 years ago, mainly because I will have been at a protest downtown supporting artists Alex and Joff, who were arrested last Saturday for displaying their artwork outside the sacred blue brackets dots boxes on Pacific Avenue, and also raising a number of other Huff issues such as the right to sleep legally, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere, the right to be in public spaces without harassment, police abuse, and of course the reopening of bathrooms so that people can find a place to take a dump, both during the day and at night. 24-hour bathrooms has been the focus, but the city has even closed down the Soquel Avenue bathrooms across from New Leaf Market with the big sign, Vandalism. So I don't think they need to have closed them for 3 weeks. I think that's a direct slap in the face of poor people whose access is only to public bathrooms. So the June 22nd show 2000 that you're going to be hearing has a number of issues that will be discussed. I won't have time to kind of interrupt the ancient discussion with my own current analysis, but I will give you a sort of preview of what's going to be discussed. They'll be talking about, various folks will be talking about the city council's killing of the safe sleeping zones in industrial areas, which it actually voted on a first reading, changing the law, but then backed off under pressure from NIMBYs in the districts. There's going to be a interview with folks whose jewelry was seized by the SCPD, I think very pertinent with the Vanish the Vendors law rolling around on the second Tuesday in May to come back to City Council. There's a discussion and criticism of Robert Steffen, also known as the man in the garbage bag, who used to sit outside Bunny's Shoes many years ago when he was running for president, and on the bench there, apparently terrorizing everyone with his silent presence. He said nothing. And also, they didn't have a 24-hour be gone from a bench after an hour law at that time. I guess it was the Steffen law. And he also later became known as the slow-walking pink guy. You may remember he was dressed in a pink outfit and moved very slowly along Pacific Avenue. Again, there'll be an analysis with the Chamber of Commerce CEO Mike Schmidt, who later became a fierce and outspoken opponent and organizer against the sleeping ban, in spite of his conservative credentials in the past, along with insider activist David Silva, who in those days was sort of the key activist who the city council members invited into their confidence and then apparently stabbed in the back. Silva made the same mistake, I think, that the other activists like Phil Posner and Steve Plaich made when they essentially went to privatized meetings that excluded the other activists. And that, I think, is always a mistake. Finally, there's a debate and discussion. Well, debate isn't the word. It's more of an analysis of the latest in what was then the proposal to set up the Dolphin Lee project, the abolition of the Dolphin and Lee apartments in favor of the Nueva Vista project, which is now in the beach flats, sending a lot of Latinos off into the wilderness with no housing, but pleasing Mercy Charities and City Council member, Shadow Mayor Catherine Byers at that time, who wanted the project for years and finally got it, even at the expense of the living quarters of many poor Latinos. James Ney is the guy who talks about that with me. He's a longtime activist who's been arrested a number of times for peaceful protests at City Hall and on Pacific Avenue. Still around, but isn't mostly not downtown. So you're going to be hearing that shortly. Enjoy it. Give me a call at 423-4833 if you have any comments, you want to be on the air, if you have any breaking news. And we'll be back on Sunday, the 24th, with a report on the protests that happened earlier today.
It's the 22nd of June, 2000. Whoa. This is Battle Spears Broadside, your civil rights show, coming up to you Thursday evening, as usual, 6 to 8. Stay with us for updates on media flood on the Dolphin Lee. Looks like abortion of the safe sleeping zones and the usual stuff from the streets with Bathroom Spear Robert Norse. I'm your host. I'll be with you for the next 2 hours.
Land building, Berlin.
Yeah, with the police officer, when the police officer was trying to tell him that there was better things he could do and why didn't he just move along.
Right, uh-huh. Oh, really?
Stuff like that.
How long had that been, had that aspect of the conversation gone on?
It didn't go on very long at all before Robert
said, please go about your business. I don't need this kind of information. If you're making an arrest, do it. Otherwise,
well, he didn't go that far either. Right. He just said, this is where I need to stop talking to you.
Right. And what did Officer Black then say?
He came over and dialogued with the merchants here.
Which merchants did he talk to?
I don't know him well enough down here, Robert.
And that is sort of a bit of an unintelligible aspect of a conversation between me and Jerry Henry. Jerry Henry is a man on trial, currently on trial, and the trial will resume in Department 2 tomorrow for, I think it's seven or eight charges, for which he faces about 10 years in jail, which pretty much boils down to sitting on a car in front of the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center and advising young people about their rights not to move along when the first alarm security and the deputies out there tell them to, and also protesting his exclusion from stores in a strong verbal fashion at times, but apparently never so strong as at any time in the last 3 years to result in an immediate disturbing the peace charge, for which he was successfully prosecuted. Now they're lumping together a whole bunch of charges against this guy who's kind of a street activist, a street minister. He kind of likes to advise young people how to, again, not just what their rights are, but how to avoid hard drugs, feeds people. He used to work with Feed the People when it was still operational. You can still find him down at Hippie Planter in front of the New Leaf Market. His name is Jerry Henry, and again, he resumes trial, I believe it's at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning in Department 2, what had been Salazar's court, and now out of retirement has come Judge Kelsey, and he is trying that case in front of a jury. The district attorney who's prosecuting the case is none other than the famous George Kovacevich, probably not famous to anybody who's listening, but he was in fact a real judge here in Santa Cruz for a brief period of time in 1996, for about 3 months, and then I guess he was an appointed judge who then either didn't get reelected or chose not to run again. I'm not sure about the specifics there, but he returned to the district attorney's office, and he is now kind of the bright, fair-haired boy, although he's dark-haired, in fact, curly hair, who is sort of the second or third in command in the DA's office, and he has chosen to be the one to rack Jerry Henry. This is a man who was twice arrested on $100,000 bail for, again, what are essentially nonviolent offenses that don't involve any destruction of property, don't involve any injury against any person, but simply involve, quote, interfering with the business. And the businesses involved were Gottschalk's, the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company, Rancho Liquors, and I guess M&M Party Favors, as well as the ever-vigilant deputies substation. Now, the defense witnesses are coming on tomorrow. Should be an interesting day. I suggest folks might want to take time out from whatever else they're doing, and check out that situation down at Department 2. Again, I believe it starts at 10. If you show up a little early, well, it's okay. We'll look around, check out some of the other cases. The way the courtroom operates is always amusing to behold if you are, of course, not in the defendant's seat. What else we got going on here? Let's roll with a street interview or two. I hope we can get something a little more intelligible this time. There is going to be a possible interruption of the show, a rather grim interruption. Gary Graham apparently has lost his last appeal. He's scheduled to be executed tonight. There are still some numbers mentioned here on the board to call. I tried them last night and they were full or they didn't answer, but you certainly can try them again. Governor Bush, 512-463-2000. Board of Pardons and Parole, 512-406-5852. I'll repeat those numbers. This is a man who, from what I've been reading, he staved up execution five times. There were four or five alibi witnesses that were not allowed to be presented. Witnesses who specifically said he wasn't there because they saw another man there were disallowed. I haven't read the transcript of the trial, and I haven't studied it very carefully, just read the flyers, but I know that a lot of people are concerned about this. Ben, perhaps you've done a little reading. Any information on that Gary Graham case?
Not much more than what's up here that I've read. Basically just that
He was picked out of a lineup of a bunch of people who obviously had nothing to do with, who had looked nothing like the description of the gunman who shot a white man and robbed him outside of a supermarket. And apparently there's quite a few alibis basically would have testified for his innocence, but except for the fact that they were not presented at that trial. He had a really, really bad defense lawyer, so I don't know. It's pretty obvious that there's so many defects in the case that there's probably about, I would say, about a 1 out of 50 chance that he could even possibly maybe be guilty, which I totally doubt, so there's
it's
about other 49.
In the paper today, Ben, there's been a lot of, we've seen these overwhelming majorities for capital punishment. Now they're suddenly getting turned around as it becomes clear that genetic evidence, judicial error, and economic differences are producing a discriminatory enforcement of the death penalty. So that's, I think, an interesting outcome. California, there's now pressure in California to suspend executions pending a very careful examination of how the death penalty is administered. We don't have the death penalty usually on the streets of Santa Cruz. I guess there is a death penalty in a certain sense. I know I attended a memorial for a dead man, Sarge, yesterday, homeless man. Died, probably alcohol-related heart attack, heart failure, I believe it was. We had a little ceremony at Scope Park around 3. Same day that, by the way, activist Jane Immler came to town. Calamity Jane, as we used to call her, ran for city council back in 88, ran for sheriff in 87, fasted twice for 33 days continuously, and was successful in starting the Cedar Street Cold and Rainy Night Shelter in 1985 through that fast. She scared the bejabbers out of the Board of Supervisors and the City Council, and the next year she helped to break the logjam around the River Street Mini Shelter, or which is now called the River Street Shelter, which is one of the programs which I often sneer at, but it does provide shelter space for about 30 to 35, 36 people in sort of these so-called transitional programs, which does provide, you know, a small amount of relief for a small number of people, and insofar as it provides that kind of relief, it's good. Anyway, Jane Immler came to town for a day. This is the same day that the Sarge Memorial was held at Scope Park. And, you know, here's another casualty of the streets. Like many others, 19 dead last year on the streets. As if, you know, getting beaten up was not bad enough by troll busters, getting harassed by police and spat on and honked at by Harvey West folks driving by, or natural bridges, NIMBYites, who apparently it's not good enough that they keep you away from their homes by 300 feet, which I'll remind you is the length of a football field, and that's what is required under the what we had hoped would be the sleeping ban repeal in the industrial zones. Now it looks like that one, although we've got no final word from any of the executioners, because they're executing this law as well as Gary Graham, apparently, authorities, that is, authorities in different places. Looks like the sleeping ban repeal is going to go down again unless, it is going. Apparently the politicians are saying no, although it's hard to tell. We can't get a straight answer from any of these politicians. We just hear them secondhand from the media. But my response to that is always they will say no until we make them say yes. It's really quite simple. And the issue of the sleeping ban has been around so long, and people have become, I think, so much better educated on it, that while there are strong pressure groups in the merchant and business communities who are now pressing against it, I am actually more hopeful. I have been more hopeful, at least over the last week or two, that we're in a position to really start the kind of sustained protests that will result in a real change in the sleeping ban. So, let's hear a little bit now from some folks on the street. You may have wondered what happened to those hemp jewelers who Sergeant Hennig ran into in front of the coffee roasting company. I may have mentioned this on the show. It's a couple that lay out their wares downtown on Pacific Avenue. You may have seen them there in front of the coffee roasting company across from Starbucks. Cops were harassing them periodically for doing this, even though they said it was for a donation. Sergeant Hennig actually picked up the jewelry, saying, "This is for a donation, and I'm going to donate it away." And he started giving away jewelry to people who were walking by, and people who were walking by gave it back to the people on the sidewalk, and Hennig walked off frustrated. But then I didn't see them for several weeks, and I thought, well, maybe Hennig came back and was able to get rid of them and get them out of there. They apparently, however, had moved to the boardwalk, and now we're going to hear a brief interview with them. This is a very brief interview because I was rushing into a do a TV show yesterday when I did this interview. The TV show will be airing on Club Cruise, which is the 7 o'clock show. There's actually, I believe, a Club Cruise rerun tonight, Thursday night at 7 and 45 minutes, for those of you who get the cable. It used to be Channel 72. It's moved. Is it Channel 27 now? I'm not sure. It sounds like it's more like dyslexia on my part than anything else, but it has moved to another channel. Anyway, we've got two new shows that will be coming on in the weeks ahead. One of them, an interview with SCAN activist Fred Geiger around the issues of why bother with this bunch of council clowns? What have they done? Nothing. What do we need to do is really activate people at the grassroots. And then a second interview with Steve Argue, as you know, out of jail for a week after 7 months in stir. And he talks a lot about what happened in jail. Some of it, most of it's probably pretty much old stuff for the free radio folks because they've heard Steve a lot. But he speaks about it with deliberation and eloquence. It's got a few new wrinkles on it. Keep your eye tuned, if you have television, to Club Cruise, 7 o'clock on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Now, this Thursday, I think it's going to be a repeat of the Dolphin Lee, although I'm not sure. Interviews around that apartment complex where 200 to 400 people are fighting for real affordable housing, not some sort of makeshift evict half of us and prune the rest of us project, which is what the redevelopment agency wants to do. But let's check out the scene with the hemp jewelers.
Hey, it's about 4:30. We're talking to
Melissa
and Eric. You guys are selling jewelry. It's June 21st. We're in front of Community TV. What happened?
Well, we were sitting out on the boardwalk with our jewelry out in front of us, along with all our beads and our boxes and everything we had. And a cop comes up, asks us to move our jewelry. Do not display it. And then we're like, fine, okay. So we pull our jewelry back. And then he begins to write Eric a ticket. And then he does not write me a ticket. And on top of that, he decided he was going to take everything we had.
The name of the police officer?
I don't know his name. I asked for his card twice, and he wouldn't give it to us.
What did he look like?
He was a bike cop, scrawny, and really kind of a rather tall. I've been looking for you.
And when did this happen?
About 3 days ago.
You've had no jewelry since?
We've down to very minimal. We went out and bought more hemp, but we're very, very minimal.
You've driven away from the roasting company as well?
No. We just have not been there within this last couple of weeks because of the fact that we have been boogie boarding.
I'm going to talk to you later. I'm running up late for a TV show.
And I actually made the TV show. Call-in number, by the way, for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. That's my show. The show you're listening to on Free Radio Santa Cruz here at 96.3 is, as usual, 427-3772. We're going to be with you for the next 2 hours. If you want to catch the station's voicemail and you don't want to talk to me on the air, but you want to say something to the crew of the station, try 427-4523, 427-4523. If you want to write something to Free Radio, it's P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And on the net, you can catch us at frsc@microradio.net. And that's the email address, I'm sorry. And the net is www.microradio.net/frsc. And all that information you can catch again if you've missed any part of it at 427-4523. But the most important thing to remember is to give a call to the station. If anything that I'm saying irks you, energizes you, or you think requires some kind of response. And the number to call is 427-3772. 427-3772. That's our station here. If you want to catch me off air, like if you want to get in touch with me on homeless issues, because that's primarily what the show is about, homeless rights issues, rights for folks who are on the streets, the number is 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. And that is how it is with the numbers. Now, the bit of tape I played you around the Jerry Henry trial that is continuing tomorrow was actually really about something else. Jerry Henry is a man who's He wasn't dismayed when he was evicted from the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center on a $100,000 bail and the threat of being returned to jail if he returned there simply to be there and drink a cup of coffee and talk to young people and sitting on the benches. Those were his crimes. And of drawing the attention of the public to the deficiencies of the police and of the merchants there in terms of their determination to use sort of a naked form of power to exclude him. It wasn't just that he was, when they excluded him from there, he moved into the Santa Cruz downtown Pacific area. And you can find him now in front of, as I said, New Leaf Market. The day that I ran into him and you heard that taped segment, he was actually, however, in front of Bunny's Shoes. Now, let me ring a bell with some of you, because Bunny's Shoes is the store on Pacific, down a bit from the Roasting Company, between the Roasting Company and the Cinema 9 movie theater, or you might say the new Cooper House. And that place, of course, has a bench in front of it, which is the daytime location, you can say anything else, that's the way to put it, of Robert Steffen, the man behind the black plastic garbage bag, the umbrella man, the guy who's running for president, looking for a campaign manager, looking for housing, looking for a lawyer as well, because apparently police feel that if they want to have some kind of a street fair, they can just move him by declaring he's somehow psychologically unfit, the way they dragged off David Silva from city council 2 weeks ago, claiming he was a danger to himself or a danger to others, I'm not sure which, and they 5150'd him, or they tried to. They didn't last too long, 2 hours. It lasted longer for Robert. He was taken away for the weekend. This is an interview with Robert Steffen. I'm sorry, not an interview with him. This is an interview with other residents of the Palomar Hotel. That's the building that kind of oversees the bench on which he sits. A lot of them were angry with him for, quote, taking their bench. And we have some discussion with some of the folks there, some of them old, elderly, some of them, most of them elderly, in fact. We discussed the Robert Steffen situation. This is a tape from two or three months ago, but I think it's quite relevant because I saw a similar kind of sit-in protest against Robert Steffen. He usually shows up on that bench around 8:30, doesn't leave till 7 or 8, although his hours may have changed. And the residents were going to find a way to stop that. Here's an interview about that subject. Bunny Shoes and the Hat Company.
Let me look in, because I can recognize you.
So,
this gentleman was here.
So, are you guys actually being paid to sit on this bench?
No.
Okay,
no way.
I appreciate that. Because we heard, because what Mr. Henry tells us is that someone was offering money for folks to sit here. Is that accurate? I know you're not. I believe you, but...
I'm 83 years old, and I'm going to ask somebody to pay me to sit on this bench? No way. I pay taxes the same as everybody else.
Right on, and you should have the right
the
to sit here.
The only thing we want him to move farther down. We're senior citizens. I'm 83 years old. He's older. We have a right to sit on this bench. He's been sitting here for 7 months. It's time for him to move. I don't have anything against him sitting on the mall, but let him move and let us have our... We live here. So we have a
Palomar.
Right to come down. Yes, we have a right to come down here and sit on these benches, and we haven't been able to do so for 7 months.
So you're talking about this particular bench you're on now?
Yeah, this particular bench and that bench too.
So he's been sitting on both benches, or just on this bench?
Well, I think on both benches. We have a right to sit on them. There's nobody's name on here.
I agree with you. Everyone should have a right to sit on the bench.
Right.
Right.
That's right. We have a right to sit on the bench.
Is it true that someone called the police to have him removed when he was sitting on the curb here earlier? Were you around?
I don't know anything about that.
Right.
I don't know anything about it.
What's your name, ma'am?
I prefer not to tell you.
No problem. But you are a resident locally.
Yes, have been since 1946.
Aha. So you were here when the mall was different and then changed twice, actually.
Right. I've seen a lot of changes in Santa Cruz. Some of them I approve of and some of them I don't approve of.
Anything you want to say to the Free Radio Santa Cruz audience?
Well, I think the city council needs to do more than what they're doing.
Where do you think especially they need to take action?
For the homeless people. I think they're criticizing them and that denying them of their human rights. We all have human rights, regardless of whether we're homeless. I've been homeless myself a number of years ago, and I know what it's like.
How long ago was that when you were homeless?
Oh, that was back in 25, 30 years ago.
Was it different then, do you think, than now, or pretty much the same, as far as being homeless goes?
It was a lot different because people had more compassion and helped the homeless more than to deny them their rights.
You think it was in Santa Cruz that you experienced this situation?
No.
You were in another part of the world.
I was in San Joaquin Valley.
So what I know that last night I was at the city council and I was concerned that the homeless issues task force report was presented but then just ignored by the city council. The task force said that there should be safe sleeping zones somewhere, not downtown, but in industrial areas somewhere where homeless people can sleep without a ticket, and the city council did absolutely nothing. I was upset about that. How did you feel about that?
Well, I feel the same way. I think we need to get a new city council, to be honest about it.
Are you considering running, perhaps?
No, no way. I'm not a politician.
That's what we need. I mean, it isn't a politician.
Well, that's right. I think that's right. Anything you want to add?
No, not necessarily. I just think that the city council is, they need to do more than what they're doing towards homeless people. I think they're sitting on their, you know what, and they're not doing anything. A big eye and little you, you know. They're the big eye and the homeless people are the little you.
Yeah. Completely in agreement with you, personally, and I think a lot of the town is also in agreement with you, and I'm just surprised that the city council doesn't realize that and act on it. They keep being afraid that somehow they're going to be criticized if they take action to make it legal for homeless people to sleep somewhere while they're looking for shelters for people. And I don't think that's the case. I think most people would support that, provided we're not talking about sleeping anywhere and everywhere.
Well, Robert, my point is this. Why do they ticket the homeless people and charge them $54 when if they had money where they could help get housing? If they can't find a place to live and afford a place to live, how are they going to afford $54 or $100 for a ticket? What are they going to do? Throw them in jail for 2 or 3 days?
That has happened, or they
and then yeah. And have the taxpayers pay for it?
Which is pretty expensive lodging, pretty expensive, much more expensive than giving a person even a hotel room. It's kind of a strange thing.
Right. There's a lot of places down on Front Street that the city council could look into that they could turn into places for the homeless to stay at night. What about all those buildings down there that were car lots before? They're sitting there empty. Why don't they contact the property owners and try to make some kind of arrangements with them to open it up at night for the people to sleep in?
Are you listening, Mayor Sugar?
I have no doubt.
Well, I don't think much of him.
No doubt.
I don't either, unfortunately. I would just encourage you to put this in a letter to the Sentinel, which may or may not print it, and also call the City Council at 420-5020 and say to them, for what it's worth, it's worth a lot, but it's not worth much if they don't listen, but I still think it should be said. 420-5020 is their number. I'd be happy to write it down for you. You can call them any time of the day or night and leave them a message and say, come on, guys. That's what you're saying to me.
Well.
But I'm going to play this on the air tomorrow night on Free Radio Santa Cruz. So hopefully one council member will be listening. I'm going to call at least one council member and say, here's the voice of a woman who's older than I am, who's older than you are, who's been around for more years than both of us, and who lives here, you know. And it's not like she doesn't assert her rights and doesn't have a strong opinions. You probably have strong opinions that disagree with mine on Robert Stephan, you know. But it sounds like you agree that something should be done. I mean, one of the reasons I think Stephan is here, for instance, is because there aren't adequate places to sleep. In a way, this is a kind of a protest, I think, that he's doing. And it impacts people. I think one of the few ways he sees to impact people is being in a public place in this way. It's not just a matter, I think, of sitting on a bench. I think it's a form of protest. And if the council were acting to establish real zones for people, it might be different. I could be wrong. It could be something else. But that's my understanding.
Well, my point is this. They have the sleeping ban. No camping ban. Right? Well, how come they permit him to camp out here 7 days a week? for 12 to 13 hours a day. He never gets up, goes to the bathroom. Once he sits on the bench, he never moves. And that's a health hazard. I'm an old retired nurse, and you can't tell me that that's not a health hazard.
Well, you know, I my nose isn't as sensitive as yours, but I've never smelled any, let's say, feces or urine or any particular health problem that I've noticed. I've never smelled any bad odor about Robert. It could be that I don't spend the time here that you do. Have you noticed that? Or?
Yes, I have a number of times.
Okay, and most recently, when was that?
Oh, a couple of 3 days ago.
Okay, I think that's a legitimate concern to bring to his attention, certainly, and I will do that. He doesn't talk with me much, as you know. He doesn't talk to folks much generally.
He don't talk to anybody.
What did he say this morning?
Well, he was talking with the deputy, and he said he didn't know that it was against the law to sit on the curb, and he told the deputy it was time for him to quit speaking to him, and he was speaking to the deputy.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the concern that this resident has is that she feels, she has a number of concerns, but one of the concerns was she thought that she smelled evidence of, I don't know, incontinence. Is that the way to put it? Or?
Yeah, I would.
Have you smelled any evidence of incontinence? You've been sitting here.
As in urination?
Urination or feces.
The smells that emanate towards me from him is kind of indescribable, I'd like to say.
So it's not a recognizable odor?
It's recognizable as probably many different odors.
Yeah, but not particularly as urine or feces. You don't think he's taking a crap or pissing
his
pants?
I would not be surprised if he pissed his pants.
Well, perhaps I better sit down.
So,
I did sit down next to Robert, and have been sitting here for a few minutes, and I haven't smelled any kind of smell of incontinence, or even uncleanliness, or even sweat. Of course, this is a plastic. Well, no, I think
if you would have smelled.
I do smell some coffee, you know.
Yeah, you give him a hot dog and coffee, but he doesn't want to smell.
Right. Well, that's right. That's a nice offer. So I've got to say, at the moment, I don't think there's any public health hazard, as has been suggested. I think there's a hostility by a number of folks because. Well.
That's not. But
yeah, I mean,
what can you consider an eyesore, exactly?
Right. I mean, also, if this is a question of, I think it's a combination of lack of communication here. I mean, Robert, or choice not to communicate. Robert has chosen not to communicate with folks generally, and he has the right to do that. But I think it also presents a situation where people have concerns. They don't know how to express them in a way that would work them out. And that may be part of the problem.
You know, perhaps they may quell the situation is another bench put in.
Perhaps? More benches, I think, is an excellent idea. But we could ask.
Maybe put some by the coffee roasting company where they're most needed, you know?
Right. I think just up and down the mall. I mean, there used to be all kinds of sitting spots right along the years ago.
You know what would be really nice is maybe some cement built-in benches, you know, like nice little, like kind of how they have over there, like with little gardens.
Right. Well, the problem has been that the city council has redesigned the mall to make it more difficult to sit down.
Yeah.
The idea being to stop the transient element and engage in a kind of social cleansing, which, you know, allows a few space for some folks. St. Vincent's truck seems to be demolishing some of the local architecture here.
No, that's Shin's Gallery.
Oh, Shin's Gallery. Sorry about that. Again, Jerry, let me ask you, what do you say that the merchants were soliciting complaints to try to get Robert removed here?
Yeah, they were soliciting the officer on what they could do to get him moved and trying to say that he was blocking the handicap zone. And
by sitting on the curb?
No, by having his stuff.
Yeah, here. Robert has a sort of a shopping cart with a sign on it.
With garbage, and it's not. It's his possession.
No, it's his possession. True.
And the police officer told him unless he abandoned them, there was, you know, he had the right to have his possessions here.
Mm-hmm.
I was.
Yeah, where else were they going to be, you know?
Yeah, I was.
Somebody
was
offering a storage
this
spot.
Morning. But then, you know, I'm kind of new down here on the mall. I've just
You're
been
the new kid on the block. And
yeah,
since
I got banished from Abdos, I've been coming down a little, but it was appalling this morning, watching what I said. It just brought deja vu back with me.
All over again.
Yeah, not being, the merchants, you're not acceptable to the merchants, and so they're going to
They have the right to remove people now, from public places.
You yourself are facing a trial on these kinds of charges, what, in June now? It's been moved to...
June 16th, I believe.
The hammer to the Pentagon, to the bing bang, to the Pentagon, and I'm living in Florida, for they made me a millionaire. They gave me $700 for every silly little hammer, for I sold them to the Pentagon, and they made me a millionaire. So you sell the nails to the bing bang, to the Pentagon, yes, you sell them nails, and they'll make you a millionaire. Sold a coffee pot to the Pentagon, to the hee-haw, to the Pentagon, and I'm living on a golf course, for they made me a millionaire. They gave me $5,000 for every silly little coffee pot, for I sold them to the Pentagon, and they made me a millionaire. So you sell our coffee to the hee-haw, to the Pentagon, yes, you sell them coffee, and they'll make you a millionaire. Sold a toilet seat to the Pentagon, to the Yahoo, to the Pentagon, and I'm living in a condo, for they made me a millionaire. They gave me $600 for every folding little toilet seat, for I sold them to the Pentagon, and they made me a millionaire. So you know what you can sell to the Yahoo, to the Pentagon, yes, you know what you can sell, and they make you a millionaire. Is burning, the kids won't eat. The bacon splattered on my bare feet. The kids are screaming, the dog's in heat. It's Monday morning in paradise. Granddad's complaining about his heart. The brand new toaster just flew apart. It started snowing, the car won't start. It's Monday morning in paradise. It's Monday morning, a brand new day. A new day dawning with a hell to pay. It's Monday morning, I mean to say. They seem to come every other day. My son, the genius, has lost a shoe. His father's socks are one black, one blue. And here comes my old friend, the flu. It's Monday morning in paradise. It's Monday morning, a brand new day. A new day dawning with a hell to pay. It's Monday morning, I mean to say. They seem to come. The toast is burning, the kids won't eat. The bacon splattered on my bare feet. The kids are screaming, the dog's in heat. It's Monday morning in paradise. Monday morning in paradise. It's Monday morning in paradise. Monday morning in paradise. It's Monday morning in paradise. Monday morning.
And that was some old songs from Tom Paxton, who kind of the runner-up to Phil Oakes in my affections for topical and political songs from the 70s, and even as far back as the 60s. A couple of things off the internet. Monday, June 19th, Clark defends protests. You may remember up in Toronto, homeless folks have been engaging in some rather significant protests, and they don't seem ready to stop, and the Prime Minister has called them thugs and violent and so forth. They've said they're responding when police attack them, they fight back, which may not be the wisest thing to do, but maybe understandable. Here's a story from the Toronto Sun. Clark defends protest. And after demonstrators hurled rocks at police last week, many have been comparing him to a crazed dictator. But John Clark, soft-spoken leader of the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, says he's been wrongly vilified by the police, politicians, and the media. This has been portrayed as a mindless act of violence, but there are strong reasons behind it, said Clark. The protesters are people who have seen friends die on the street. They were rightly outraged, and elements of the police response ignited that. The real violence that needs to be looked at is against the homeless, as 22 people have died in the streets in the last few months, said Clark, who founded OCAP, Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, in 1990. Harris could have responded by meeting us, or he could have responded by clubbing them. What happened there is clearly the latter, he said. The blame for this lies in the door of the Harris government. As a protest movement, we have to cause political upheaval and economic pain, or else we'd never be heard. Clark, who came to Canada from his native Britain in 1976, downplayed suggestions that protesters themselves started the violence by hurling Molotov cocktails, paint bombs, and bricks at the police. I didn't come with my own camcorder, so I can't tell you everything that happened, he said, but I won't denounce anybody who fought back against the relentless police advance. Clark said he suggested his group won't go back to Queen's Park anytime soon. Instead, with police pushing to charge him for inciting Thursday's riot, Clark's next challenge could be getting out of jail. The new chant might be, "Release John Clark," he said, laughing softly. Clark denied he incited the riot and stressed he neither gave the main speech nor hosted the demonstration. Without groups like OCAP, the Harris government would ultimately take away all welfare and social support systems, he said. Average people are very concerned about poverty. It's people at the top end of the economic ladder who think the homeless should just have to go somewhere else. Most of OCAP's $50,000 annual budget is funded by unions. Story from the Toronto Sun, June 19th. And it kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it? We have a situation here in Santa Cruz, city council meeting coming up again on Tuesday. Nothing on the agenda. I picked up the agenda today. I've got kind of an early copy of it. I'm taking a look at it here, if I can find it. Nothing about the sleeping ban. I did talk to Dick Wilson, our city manager, this morning. We had a sort of a mini, not quite a protest, more of an inquiry at the city council offices. The new organization, ROAR, Restore Our American Rights, is a name that we've cooked up for a bunch of campers out in the Harvey West, and I guess some from Natural Bridges, who want to get some porta-potties and dumpsters, start cleaning up camp areas, take responsibility for trashy situations, but also monitor police and merchant misbehavior, defend each other, form a solidarity, and also go to city council and talk about these issues. This is at least some of the things that have come up in the conversations we've had out at Harvey West, where they hold regular meetings every Sunday at 4:30 at Du Bois and Harvey West Boulevard, that park area up there. And I suspect they're going to be holding another one next Sunday at 4:30 if you're interested. Group's name again is ROAR, Restore Our American Rights, and homeless people are a hard group to organize, I got to tell you, and the best thing to do is hopefully to step back and watch them organize themselves, which would be nice. The media apparently have been coming out to Harvey West a considerable amount in the last few days. Vehicles are getting parking tickets, most of which look legitimate in terms of the meters, for example, operate on Sundays, and some folks didn't notice that. I talked to one man in a van who got a ticket for, $12, $14, and he got a ticket because he hadn't fed his meter on Sunday, but the meters say you have to feed on Sunday, so I guess they warn you before they kick you. Whether it's justified to kick you anyway is, of course, another question. Also, vehicles are being given, I've heard of some problems for the Homeless Service Center. One vehicle was towed. Joe Kirkman out there, a man who's kind of helping to organize Roar, among other folks, said that he felt that police have been not especially repressive, but he's a bit concerned about people being moved around a lot. He's concerned that there are no porta-potties and dumpsters out there. I talked to two moms, one mom with two sons who I think works an evening shift at Denny's, another woman with several other female female folks living in their van who's, again, looking for housing. And we have folks out there who are sort of they're not like wild and crazy hippies moving through, not that there's anything wrong with that, and we don't have some of those folks. But there's a whole variety of different kinds of people out at Harvey West and at Natural Bridges, too, although I haven't spent much time out at Natural Bridges in the last few days, mostly at Harvey West, who are concerned because the businesses are using the excuse of urine and feces, also of hypodermic needles, apparently, which comes not so much from people in vehicles, I understand. Again, this is by secondhand information, but folks coming down from the Poganip or other areas out there. And there's a concern that there's no inadequate trash facilities and dumpster facilities, and maybe you might even say needle disposal facilities, which, and of course, porta potties and places where you can dispose of your waste. You know, that's what we all have. We've got to do so every few hours or every few days at least. You know, some of us have better self control than others and eat less. But of course, this is going to be true whether people sleep there legally at night or not. And so, I went down there to the city council this morning with a sort of a petition to the council and said, hey, you got to put in those dumpsters and porta potties even if you're going to stall more on the safe zones. Of course, no one was in the council offices. I left them a message, and for some reason, they haven't called back. Perhaps this is a call now. We have an incoming call. Maybe this is Mayor Sugar.
Hello, Mayor Sugar?
No, Michael Schmidt.
Oh, Michael Schmidt. Well, you're better than Mayor Sugar. We'll call you Mayor Schmidt.
No, don't do that.
Oh, so, Michael Schmidt, you, of course, are a familiar voice on the show. I take it they haven't fired you yet as area CEO for the Chamber of Commerce or CEO for the area Chamber of Commerce?
Even gave me a raise, so I guess I must be doing something right.
I see. Well, you probably know why we're calling you. Last we heard from you, I guess, was that after a June 9th meeting, a Friday meeting several weeks ago, mm-hmm. where, there was a sort of, I guess, a strange decision, strange in my book, to forget about the safe zones and instead push for something like putting the sleeping ban on the ballot in November, along with, I guess, a separate proposal for safe zones also on the ballot. Do I describe that accurately?
I think that's a pretty good description. You're right on.
And you have been, busy the last 2 weeks. I've had trouble reaching you a lot, and I appreciate you getting in touch with me off hours. Have you had any further meetings with the mayor or city council members?
Have had no further meeting with the mayor or the city council. After that Friday meeting, it was at least the understanding that I had was if the voters approved the repeal of the sleeping portion of the camping ban, and they approved the safe sleeping zone area that was going to be recommended in the Harvey West and the Natural Bridges areas, then we would be, I guess, meeting somewhere in between that time to ensure that we had everything ready to go, the porta-potties, the trash receptacles, the outreach to the community, and so forth. I think what I'm hearing, at least at this point in time, is that the areas that are impacted by the proposal have definitely been communicating with the city council in massive letter writing, emails, and phone call campaigns, which if I read the San Jose Mercury News today correctly, it seems that they have been somewhat effective. Seems that Catherine Byers may be wavering on her support for this issue to some degree, though I've never had any real direct conversations with her on this other than what I read in the paper.
Well, of course, you did meet with her in several of these meetings, right,
mm-hmm.
I guess early on.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read on this in the paper this morning or yesterday morning?
No, there was the Mercury News this morning.
This morning. I've got to look that one up. I know they had a small story yesterday morning or a couple mornings ago. Yesterday morning, I guess it was, about the safe zones.
Yeah, it probably was yesterday morning because I was out ill yesterday, so I think it was yesterday.
I think it was yesterday. But there's a new reporter, a new Mercury News reporter called Dan McLaughlin, who's Ken McLaughlin, right? Sure, is feeling his way around. He couldn't get responses from any city council members, as I heard it. I guess he heard secondhand that Byers had said something. I know that's what I heard from Fred Geiger, a scan liberal activist who's often on this show too. He said he. he overheard Byers in essence saying that she was going to dump the zones. But I, you know, what other politicians say isn't as important as what a real activist like yourself says there, Michael. So what's your feeling? Are you any less persuaded this is necessary? Are you?
I'm probably more persuaded that this is needed. As I've been trying to discuss with the areas, I'm trying to make the point to these folks: you already have the problem. They acknowledge they've had the problem for years. They already acknowledge that there's homeless people sleeping in their areas. To try to wish it away, or to
legislate
it
away, yeah,
is just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's my opinion, and I'm only one person, mm-hmm, that it's critically important that we recognize that we have this situation, that we try to deal with it, we try to be upfront with it, we try to provide support services. I think Belcher's support with the homeless resource officers, the city's desire to do the work, to put in porta potties and trash receptacles, to try to look at it as a permitting issue from a parking perspective, to stop issuing tickets for people sleeping, makes a lot more sense to me. It's more in line with what the Chamber's proposal was, which I still feel is probably one of the better ones on the table, and probably one, if we could really move that one forward, would do more to address the issue over the long term than the interim step that we're looking at now, of looking at the armory and probably the ball field that Michael Hernandez came up with, which I think it's sad that he came up with it at the 11th hour, 59th minute, mm-hmm, when he had plenty of opportunities to express his feelings and to get his oar in the water weeks and early months earlier. But nevertheless, I think it's still a proposal worth considering and worth moving forward, because I think, as we've learned from Ken Cole, trying to provide outreach services to homeless people is much more difficult than having them come to a central place where they then can be supported and given the services that so many of them desperately need, for those at least who choose to take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I went to the mayor's office this morning, and actually the city council members' offices, all of them, with Bernard Klitzner and a van person, and we presented kind of a memo suggesting that even if they are feeling that they can't do anything at all because they're getting too many complaints, which I think is not a basis for moving forward. I agree with you. You act on the issue, not on prejudiced or fearful or misinformed or even, you know, genuine concerns, but that are a little bit off target. I think a lot of these, I've been reading some of the letters, and a lot of them are just, why don't they go somewhere else? This is not suitable. Let's give them affordable housing, sort of pie in the sky kind of ideas that don't deal with the reality of 750 to 1,500 homeless people every night.
Exactly.
So I suggested that even if you won't do the safe zones, even if you're, you know, because you're going to run when Catherine Byers says she won't vote for it, if that's what, that's been Sugar's record in the past, and I'm hoping he changes it, but, you know, I have no hope that necessarily he will. Certainly you can act on putting porta potties and dumpsters in there simply for public health purposes now, for, you know, the fact that people use those areas during the day when it is legal to be there. It is legal to park there, and campers do park there. And so it seems to me that I kind of brought this forward because I heard this from several women, that they're living out there, and it's like they say that they're enforcing, it's kind of an enforced squalor on people.
Yep.
Which, you know, it's not worthy of a 21st century city, and particularly of a city like Santa Cruz, which claims to be, you know, looking forward into the future, to essentially surrender to the fears of people in businesses who, for God's sake, they have people 300 feet away from their homes at least. That's a football field away, all over Santa Cruz. Now the homeless are so untouchable they can't be anywhere near their businesses. I mean, am I going off here? Am I getting carried away? Am I getting too frenzied about things? What do you think, there, Michael?
No, I wouldn't say that you're getting too frenzied about things. I think that there's people who have taken time to educate themselves on this issue and to become familiar, at least, if nothing else, just in a cursory way, with the individuals that are involved. Then there's folks who are acting on their perceptions, most likely their misperceptions, on their fears. I think Emily Riley said at one of the meetings very well, the biggest mistake we could make as a community is to act on our fears. We need to act on true information. We need to act on to solve problems, not just to run from them. And I think that, to some degree, it's human nature. Natural. It's people that I think some of them felt that they should have been talked with first, and there's probably some merit to that argument.
Sure.
And there's some people that are just downright angry that their area was targeted.
mm-hmm. as they believe it. But then those same people, when you sit down with them and you say, hold it, this must have just happened a couple months ago. No. Oh, you mean it didn't happen just a couple months ago? No, this problem's going on for years. Well, this has been going on for years, and now that the city and even some members of the community are willing to step up to the plate and say, let's try to address the issue, let's try to solve the issue, let's try to put some resolve to the issue, let's try to provide some services to help mitigate what you say has been the problem for years, and all of a sudden, no, don't want that either. And it's real, you know, I think it's just human nature, because unfortunately there's been a few bad apples, I'm sure, over the years that have left a lasting perception or in the minds of some of the folks in these areas, and those are the ones that they focus on, whereas the overwhelming majority, as I had a lady call me today, mm-hmm. who was mad as hell about reading the article about the letter that came from the Texas Instruments person. She said that she has lived in that area. She says that they've had a few people that have abused their front yard, and they've taken some water from them from times, but she said the overwhelming majority have been really nice people. They've had no problem with them at all. And she says she's had the same kind of experience when she's gone downtown. The overwhelming majority of the people she runs in downtown are very nice people, but she has every now and then you read it from some jerk or a panhandler or a kid or an older person, whomever, who really, you know, does no appropriate behavior in our society. And she was just incensed that, you know, here's people finally trying to get porta potties and trash receptacles, which she felt was very much needed. But on the other hand, now they say, no, we don't want anything out here. We want this problem to go away. Well, it didn't. I doubt seriously if it's going to go away. And I doubt seriously if we continue to stick our head in the sand that we're going to accomplish anything. And if we can step up to the plate and try to address these issues, and then as new issues arise, then we'll have to address those issues. But I really believe that at least my commitment to try to find safe and legal places is still on the table.
Well, it's interesting. I know that I heard from David that, and I think I also may have heard it from you, although not sure, that the police chief who attended some of your operational group meetings closed to all other homeless activists and to homeless people, which I thought was a mistake, but who listens to me, he said, you know, he agreed with, I guess, other folks on the committee that said it was very important that the police continue to enforce other laws, such as littering, such as defecation and urination, such as, you know, violence, such as theft, such as all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And yet we saw a parade of horribles, a grand guignol, if you will, back on June 13th at City Council at the public communication session, this parade of people from, mostly I guess from the Mission area, Mission Street, upper Mission Street Extension, talking about how police had told them they could not enforce any laws up there. Now, were these people making it up? Were these rogue officers talking to them? Are police officers not being effectively informed? What's your reading on that?
My perception, and I've only had a few conversations with people in the department, it seems that there was some serious confusion in the part of the police. I think they were being told, being given mixed messages, I think Steve Belcher is trying to work very effectively with the homeless community. Trying not to be perceived as the bad guy. He doesn't want to look at being the heavy, the 100-pound gorilla walking through the neighborhood. And in the course of doing that, I think the message that some of the officers got, well, we seem to be having this moratorium going in place, so let's don't make a big issue out of these people parking or sleeping in these areas. But it's my understanding, as of an email I got today, that the police are preparing a pamphlet that will be distributed to people in these areas in the next, I thought today was starting it, or maybe tomorrow, and then they would be advising them that starting next week they're going to be enforcing littering and urination and defecation and parking laws and all the rest, that there has been, though, there is no moratorium on in these areas.
But there never was a moratorium. Why have they stopped enforcing those laws even to begin with? I mean, they weren't given that direction by the city council, were they?
I don't believe so, but I think that it appears to me that what I'm hearing is that there was a perception that they did have, that the city council had created this or was about to create this moratorium, so, you know, you don't want to add fodder to the fire, so you take a lower profile.
Yeah, but that's a moratorium on sleeping, not a moratorium on everything else.
That's right, and I don't know what the issue is with that, and I haven't had a conversation with Steve. I'll be meeting with him next week, and maybe I can learn more firsthand and report to you then, but at least from some of the people that I've talked with who had spent more time with the officers, had the impression that the officers were really confused as to what they could or shouldn't do, given the city council's proposed ordinance changes, and that this was probably not the time to try to do some mass arrest or move people along and this kind of stuff that maybe they had. And I understand from what I've talked to some of the folks out there that there was never great enforcement anyway in these areas, so there probably was nothing, I mean, other than the increased numbers, there was really no change.
I'm talking to Michael Schmidt, who's been a key player in trying to establish first safe places and now safe zones for homeless people, even though I guess the Chamber of Commerce itself has not specifically come out for safe zones.
Yes, we have.
Oh, you have come out for safe zones.
We did come out for safe
zones.
Wow. We do support the Chamber's proposal of looking at the armory and even the
I was talking about the industrial zones.
The board is not too hot on that idea.
Right. But you, on the other hand, are supportive of it individually. So I know that also I talked to Dick Wilson this morning and as we went kind of to the city council offices saying, representing this new group, ROAR, Restore Our American Rights, which is a sort of a camper group that's forming up there. They meet every Sunday at 4:30 at Du Bois and Harvey West Boulevard, in case you decide you want to check in on what's happening. And you'll probably be out visiting one of your many relatives, however, a man with a big family like you just seems to be spending the weekends away from town. Yeah, definitely should. Wilson said that, you know, I said, look, why not put in porta-potties and dumpsters immediately? He said, oh, we were never told to do that. We weren't even told to do that in terms of, preparing for a second reading. We were, in essence, told, you know, we're just told to look into the possibility. And he, you know, that seemed to me a very strange thing coming from the city manager to hear that. Frankly, I'm not a big partisan of the city manager. I'm one of his most severe critics. I've called for his resignation. I've called for his firing. I think we need a new person in there, but that's neither here nor there. What he told me was that that they are going to be bringing up, the only thing appearing on the city council agenda that I can see, and I have a copy of the agenda here, is some item to do a cleanup in that area. And I think that's a little ominous to me when they start talking about cleanups. I don't know if you were around you may have been around in the 70s when they talked about cleaning up the mall. They usually meant just sweeping people they didn't like the look of away. And I guess what they may be talking, I think Dick was talking about cleaning up the area, but not putting in the kinds of facilities that would allow people to clean up after themselves. So in essence, they can blame homeless people for a big mess and then just ignore it and leave it to happen again. It seems like sort of like one of these continuing things you do, like you shove all the Jews into a ghetto and then you claim that they live in squalid conditions. It's a sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy that sets up a very dangerous situation for a group of people. And I think that the community needs to put a lot of pressure on the council to say, look, we want to meet the genuine concerns of the people out in the neighborhoods. Well, actually, it's not even the neighborhoods. We're talking about the industrial areas far away from the neighborhoods. But we have to be talking about real and specific concerns. Another thing that was told me yesterday by a man who is not normally a friend of mine, he's been sort of hostile to me for many years, thinks I'm some sort of a grandstanding, wild-eyed activist weirdo. I don't know where he got that idea from.
I couldn't figure that one out either.
Now, he said, however, that he goes out to Harvey West in the morning to exercise, and he was going around there. He observed a strange thing happen. He said he's not a big advocate for homeless people, but he saw a woman who apparently was an owner of one of these businesses, open a business, walk inside, and then he heard the alarm start to ring. He then saw her calmly walk out, close the door, lock it. The alarm continued to ring. She walked away. 10 minutes later, she returned with a police officer with the alarm still ringing, let the police officer in. He overheard part of the conversation in which she said the police officer asked her a question as to what, some question, but there was no indication that she... looked rather suspicious. And then he said he observed the police officer drive, meet with two other officers in two other cars, and they began going up and stopping at vans, people who were parked overnight. And it all could be, not necessarily connected, But this is a guy who's quick to dismiss there being any human rights problems with the homeless. He actually came to me and said he was so concerned about this, he was going to the city council. So, you know, you add this to the thing about the police officers and out of the mouths of Mission Street residents themselves or Mission Street business people themselves saying, police have told me they will not enforce any laws. It makes you wonder if there isn't, I mean, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but isn't a real and deliberate attempt to sabotage these safe zones somewhere in the police department area and somewhere in the business community? Am I getting paranoid here, Michael?
Excuse me. I wouldn't say you're necessarily getting paranoid. And I'll try to look into that and see if I can find that there's any, you know, where there's smoke, there's usually fire. And it did strike me that with a few people that I talked with out in the Mission area, and then a couple of others who I said, well, have you had luck in the past? And they said, well, no, we had any luck in the past either. So I said, well, is this something new then? I mean, in the sense that you call a police officer and they tell you there's nothing they can do. And the one lady told me, she said, no. She said, we've been calling them for years, especially when they dump their tanks from their...
Septic
tanks from their RVs.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, the officers tell them, unless we see it happening, we can't do anything. And she said, so... From her perspective, even though there was more people out there, which she felt was more tourist than homeless, I went out there and myself, in the Special Harvey West area, and happened to talk to a guy in probably a 20-year-old Airstream,
mm-hmm.
and he said he's been coming to Santa Cruz for 20 years, and he always been coming out to this area, the Natural Bridges area. He says he comes, he parks his RV, and him and his wife spend a couple of months here in the summertime, in our summertime. So, mm-hmm. and he didn't know anything about the change and what the perception changed. He said, this is his regular time to come. And I asked him if he knew that there was an ordinance against sleeping in the streets. And he said, well, I've never had anybody tell me that. I said, in 20 years you've been coming here, nobody's ever told you that it's against the law to sleep in these areas overnight. He says, no. He says, I take my RV to a proper place and dispose of our waste. And he says, and we travel up and down in this area, Monterey Bay area. He's been coming here for 20 years. So I don't know if anything's really changed as much as just as there's now a greater focus on the part of the residents out there, and or if there really is something to what you believe, that the police and some of the folks are creating incidents that really aren't real.
Well, they're certainly trying to use some political pressure, and I'm going to have to carefully look over some of these letters and review some of the tapes of these folks. But again, my purpose is not to sort of start, you know, pointing the finger here and there, unless it really, you know, we get the smoking gun, but to find some solution. The problem is, it seems to me that a lot of these folks are not interested in a solution. They want everybody to disappear, and that's not going to happen. And as a consequence, people are going to suffer more. And it's sort of disheartening to realize that what we have to do now, at least from my perspective, is engage in more steady protest, and also, you know, set up an official mechanism where if these people really have complaints about how people are behaving out there, they can take them directly to a homeless group. Because if the police won't meet these needs, well, maybe homeless people will be able at least to pass on the concerns of these business people to those, you know, who are concerning them. The other thing I notice on the agenda is there's a homeless services officer or two, I'm not sure which, coming up. The budget is coming up on Tuesday afternoon. It's going to be passed at City Council and reviewed. And it kind of annoys me to no end that they're going to be throwing more police officers out there, but they're not going to be providing any more facilities now. They've essentially dumped the social services end of this. At least maybe they haven't, but I haven't seen. There's been nothing on the last two agendas. And instead they're just saying, here you go to Chief Belcher. Here, have another a couple more plum police positions to what a lot of us feel is a very, very over-policed city. You know, if you had a particular police officer in a position because of this particular situation as a sort of a sop to those who are concerned with, you know, needing police. And I don't think police are the best way to deal with it. I think the Eugene solution of having a social service provider who deals with this is much better, and they've had a more effective record, as I understand it, through the St. Vincent's grant they have, where they have a, if you get three, they complaints go to a special kind of an examiner who's not a police officer but an employee of St. Vincent de Paul's, and he goes to each vehicle and talks to, or she goes to each vehicle, and if the vehicle does, you know, if they get three of those complaints, they do refer it to a police officer. The police officer does give them a ticket, and it's a more serious matter. But see, that's apparently been much more effective. Anyway, I'm ruining your evening. You want to take a break. You're off to the movies, right?
No. I was Brazil yesterday, so I'm just trying to pace myself today because I got a long week, long Friday and an active weekend. So just trying to take it easy tonight.
Got any pressure from other merchants or people in the downtown chamber or the area chamber that want you to, you know, jump on board this no safe sleeping zone bandwagon that some of the folks are pushing?
I've had a few people think that the chamber should come out actively against the no sleeping zones.
You mean the sleeping zones?
The sleeping zones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the board made its commitment, and I've got them to stick with our original proposal, which I think is at least a step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
It maybe doesn't address the immediate issue of the industrial areas, but at least it doesn't shut the door either.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a giant step for what is traditionally a conservative organization.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think so too.
And I think encouraging it to go to the voters, to let the voters make the decision, and then that way the community has spoken. If the community is as progressive as we think they are, as I was talking to Paul
Rendell
today, if we get the issue, if we are as progressive as we think we are, then maybe the voters will say, yes, I think we need to provide these folks. We need to decriminalize the act of sleeping. This isn't something that we should be putting people in jail for certain. And then become more solution-oriented at that point. If that's what it's going to take to move the community forward, then maybe that's what we're going to have to do. It's unfortunate, but that seems to be the reality we're dealing with.
I hope you're right. My feeling is if you have an election, it comes down to money in a lot of these cases, and I'm afraid the money is going to be coming on the other side. And I think that in your case, the folks who support district election, you're a man who supports district elections, and you also support the safe sleeping zones, but I think it's generally going to be the opposite.
Probably.
And I think that you're going to get a landslide vote. I'm going to call it the bigot vote because that's what it is, as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, I know that you're probably going to get some $1 million contributions to support these safe sleeping zones at the ballot. Again, a phenomenal waste of money to have to go to the ballot on this. I mean, that city council seems to me its responsibility is to scan as the town tied up has for years. They don't need to sit around worrying about this and that. They should vote on this issue, put it out there, and then deal with problems as it arises. That's been my view for years. And
well, I tell you what, with that particular statement, I would probably agree with you.
Yep.
I think what we're seeing in this state, and unfortunately across the country, and I was reading a study that was done today about the voters, the lack of voters, and it was a total turnoff of politicians who really don't solve problems, and that too many of our problems now are having to go through the initiative process, which in and of itself is very confusing, and usually sponsored by people who have special interest groups.
Yep.
And special concerns, and not really the concerns of the entire community. Or you would think a city council that is elected on a citywide basis should be able to recognize that there's times when they've got to step up to the plate. And these new council members were elected supposedly on a plank to do something about the camping ban. And I certainly appreciate the fact that they think, and to some degree agree with them, that the voters may be the ones that need to make this decision because it is a community-wide issue. But then again, your point's well taken and well made. That's what these guys get paid the big bucks for.
It's true.
If they want to make a decision, they should make the decision. Or if they say we don't want to make a decision, at least let everybody know that that's where they're coming from.
Well, I think the problem has to do again with this fear of buyers. Some have fear of flying, others have fear of buyers, or maybe it's fear of losing, the fear of not having the fourth vote. When I've told, you know, I mean, I in my view, you vote your conscience on some issues, even if you lose, and eventually you'll either win or you will, you know, at least have educated the public as to where that's at. But a lot of people on this council, particularly the key people like Sugar and Crone, don't want to do that, and they're the only ones who really are in a position to take action on this. So I think what those of us in the, you know, the ground level grassroots, at least what I'm thinking of doing is focusing protests on Catherine Byers. I ran into one of her friends today at the courthouse who's a juror. Nice guy, like him. I've talked to him for years, but as far as I'm concerned, her position is indefensible on these issues. And I just, if she's gonna allow people to be arrested for sleeping for the next 4 months because of pressure from I regard as essentially specious arguments from business owners who don't want homeless anywhere in their area, then you know it's like you're dealing with a cracker, a southern cracker politician who's succumbing to Klan-type bigotry, and I just can't tolerate that.
You know what has surprised me in this whole thing? out of our meeting that Friday was that this position was presented by, was actually promoted by Celia Scott, just to put it on the ballot, as a repeal of the sleeping portion of the sleeping ban. Mm-hmm. When at the time, when we went to that meeting, most of us were prepared to move post-haste to get porta-potty locations. The city had done their work. They'd actually measured places. They'd actually identified places. We were going to look down at very specific issues. We knew that it was going to probably take longer than we originally thought, but at least we were going to move forward to get everything implemented and hopefully get it done in an expeditious time frame. And then David comes up with this proposal that him, Cecilia Scott, had agreed to, that has came out of the progressive community. And here we're sitting in stagnation today.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that what has kind of surprised me is that we seem to come full circle on this whole thing.
Well, the problem again, and David and I have disagreed with this one, you know, time and time again. I think, first of all, David shouldn't have been in there alone. If there had been another activist in there from Huff, they would have never agreed to such a deal. Because, as I said, the most obvious, though one agrees in theory with the idea of taking it to the voters, and we indeed have pushed for, you know, initiatives in the past, the reality of that, if you're faced with that versus a choice of initiating it as a law, you obviously want the law. There's no question about it. But first, it's more immediate. Second of all, it doesn't apply depend on the vagaries of finances. And I don't understand. I think David just got really fed up with the process. He felt that there was no... he wasn't getting anywhere. The zones were shrinking. The police were sabotaging the whole deal. It was being stalled by this bogus environmental review. Another thing I heard from Dick Wilson today is, oh, the environmental review could take 4 to 6 months. That's his latest... what's needed, of course, is people to light a fire under those who are using excuses to push their own political agenda, which is, of course, not to have the sleeping ban changed. And I think Dick Wilson, frankly, is one of those. I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. I think what we need to do is we need to set up a new working group that involves homeless people, activists, and folks who really do want safe zones immediately. And I think we need to find, you know, if we're not going to get safe zones, we need to start engaging in peaceful sort of protests for civil rights that will make sure that people aren't getting beaten up during this period of time. They'll make sure that there are adequate porta-potty facilities. We have to work around the existing law. We can, but I think we need a new organization and a new set of groupings to do this. And it sounds like, you know, maybe you might be interested in that.
Well, let's see where it goes.
All right. I don't want to... I will not try to pin you down at this time, but I'll be at your house tomorrow soliciting money.
Okay.
We've been talking to Michael Schmidt, CEO of the Area Chamber of Commerce, activist who has, probably it's not unfair to say, you've spent hundreds of hours on this issue in the last few months.
Not quite that many, but quite a few.
Dozens of hours.
Probably, I think I told my board I'd spent to date probably about 90 hours involved in this issue.
Well, I notice you're accessible in ways that the mayor, that even someone as good-hearted as David Silva, that Ken Cole are not. And I want to thank you again for being on Free Radio and letting us know and letting the community know what's going on in a way that others just don't take the time to do. David Silva accepted.
Okay, you take care and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Michael.
Okay, bye-bye.
And you are still tuned, I hope, to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Looks like the calls may begin to come in now. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, David Silva here.
Hey, David.
I'm really very skeptical about Michael Schmidt's lack of memory and Michael Schmidt's failure to remember very, very strong, clear promises from the chief of police and to say that he's going to get to the chief of police and find out what went wrong. It's absolutely shocking to me that he would characterize that meeting as not having a homeless person. For one thing, there was a working homeless person in that meeting. Also, his memorandum that the mayor asked him
to... actually, David, he didn't characterize it. I did, so it wasn't his fault. No.
The memorandum that the mayor asked him to write about that meeting, mm-hmm. It took him 2 weeks to get it to me, and when I got it, it was not what we agreed on. It was not a division of the decriminalization of sleep from safe sleeping zones. He had it linked back together again in his memorandum. So I had to do a whole new memorandum to give to the mayor and to give to Tim and Chris.
Now, who did the memorandum in the first place?
Michael Schmidt. The mayor asked Michael Schmidt to do a memorandum of what the results of that meeting was.
I see.
And I have always said that what the city council should do is to decriminalize sleeping. The safe sleeping zones, so-called safe sleeping zones, were not for the homeless. The safe sleeping zones were the compromise for those that are housed and in fear. That if anything that you can zone, it would be camping. But you can't really zone sleeping. If they were to put, we put decriminalization of sleep on the ballot, and because Catherine Byers won't vote on it. That's the only reason we're putting it on the ballot. Now, if they put also safe sleeping zones on the ballot as a separate issue, that safe sleeping zones vote will get us into court and we'll finally get this thing resolved.
Can you explain that a bit?
Yeah, well, you can't zone sleeping. You can zone camping. You know, it's unconstitutional. It's a human rights violation to zone sleeping. You know, you can't do that. That was something we gave into. That was something that the city manager wanted. That was something the chief of police wanted. That was something that everybody in the room except me and Tim Fitzmaurice wanted. We made that compromise when we had our negotiations to end the fast. When we had our negotiations to end the fast, our only demand was decriminalization of sleep now. What we got was a provisional. What we asked for was, then can you do a provisional decriminalization of sleep? We couldn't get that. Instead, we got this provisional safe sleeping zone. And you know, I've reported you so many times what happened to that provisional safe sleeping zone. It went from a possible 950 car capacity down to less than 300 car capacity by all the demands that kept being made each time, including Emily Riley, along with everybody else, making porta potties portable. They had to be moved every 72 hours, was absurd. I went today with Chris Crone to look at the industrial areas to see how much is really going on out there. Mm-hmm. And we talked to some people from Roar, and we found out that we did find one battery in the street, and Chris and I started to pick it up and take it away, and some disabled man was on crutches, he's very disabled, was in another car, and he came running over, "What are you doing? You're taking my battery." And we gave him back the battery. He said, "Well, it was in the middle of the street, sort of." So he says, "Well, I'm sorry, I just had a hard time." And, you know, it was like there are some momentary circumstances that people can see some bad, but it's not a trash bin out there,
no,
because Roar is every morning picking up the trash that somebody from outside that's not sleeping there is coming out and dropping out and dumping in those vacant lots. Mm-hmm. That's an actual sabotage that's going on. Mm-hmm. Catherine Byers, in her jogging, discovered that somebody had dumped a bunch of couches over there at the Mission Street Extension. So there is a sabotage going on, and the chief of police lied, straight-faced lied to me in that negotiation. He said he was going to do every effort to inform all his police officers immediately the difference between sleeping and camping, and that they were to enforce the camping, and they were to let people sleep, and that they were to completely enforce all other laws. They would not let it become what they let it become, a backlash kind of opportunity. He promised me to his face, if I came off the fast, that he would do that, and he lied. He lied, Robert. That has been actual sabotage. Now,
our chief of police, Chief Belcher, lied.
Well, Michael Schmidt just finished lying to you on the radio just now too, because he was in that meeting witnessing that. Now, to say that I got to get back to the chief of police to find out what went wrong is not sufficient. That's not good enough, Robert.
It sounds like he's schmoozing a bit.
He's schmoozing a little bit too much, and since I was made the same promise 2 weeks ago that Keith Sugar is going to go talk to the chief of police to find out what went wrong, mm-hmm. and then Catherine Byers made me a promise she's going to go to the chief of police to find out what went wrong. Well, what went wrong is he actually sabotaged the provisional safe sleeping zone. So we were not going to be getting a provisional safe sleeping zone. What we were getting was a Rococo Baroque provisional trap to bring down decriminalization of sleep itself, because they had it linked together. We unlinked it at that meeting on June 9th, and Michael Schmidt rewrote the memorandum of that meeting so that it was relinked again.
Mm-hmm. Well, my question, I guess, about Christopher Crone, since you've been talking to him.
Yeah, we had a meeting today. We went out and looked at the area.
I mean,
we talked to some people from Roar, and we found out some of the stuff that's going on there. There's a lot of sabotage going on there. That's what's going on there. Uh-huh. And the police are leading the sabotage.
Well, I think that, you know, that...
And they need to be called on. It's a crime. I think the DA ought to be called in.
Right. Well, if you can get the evidence,
I'll
be right behind you.
Well, he has
to
return my call.
Yeah. You know how that's about as likely as snow in June, as you
well,
know.
Well, he's not Danner. You know, we do have a DA now. We didn't have a DA when we had Danner.
Well, your optimism is...
Well, yes, ever ebullient.
Yes, yes.
Ebullient. But, you know, this kind of kowtowing to Michael Schmidt. I mean, I love what Michael has put himself on the line, but I think, you know, he's beyond naive when it comes to this.
Well,
it's not believable naivety.
Sure, I'm trying to get a coalition together, including folks like Roar. And how did your meeting go yesterday, by the way, at the, I guess, Loudoun Nelson Center?
It went fair. We got more people to carry petitions. We got a lot more people doing the data entry. You know, we got a lot of names, and we've got to have the data entry so we can have our campaign. The Green Party is completely committed.
Now, we're talking, of course, about the campaign to end the sleeping ban and your initiative campaign to decriminalize sleep.
The petition to decriminalize sleep and have safe sleeping zones was, you know, just like when we did that first petition, we had to do compromising, trying to second guess what these voters would want. Obviously, they're not satisfied with anything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're not touched by anything, so we're going to give them decriminalization of sleep. And if they want to put safe sleeping zones on the ballot because that's because they're afraid we're going to win, then let them do it.
So did when we went to Christopher Crone's office, I guess myself and Bernard and others.
And by the way, oh, go ahead.
We asked him to if he would be willing to. We didn't talk to him. We left him a message asking whether he would put on the. Make sure that the damn porta potties and the dumpsters were put out immediately.
Well, a year and a half ago, Robert,
yes,
they voted to
exactly.
put the porta potties in the in the heavy ticketed areas, and they had a police map on the wall when they voted on it.
Right.
They showed where all the heavy ticketed areas were, and that porta potty commission was supposed to do that. Instead, they just favored the downtown.
Right, that's Christopher Crone's porta potty commission. So,
right.
what did he have to say when you brought this up to him?
Which.
That, you know, they're a little bit late in getting those porta potties out there.
Well, we didn't really go into that today. I will bring it up again at the city council meeting. The porta potties are supposed to already be in the places where there was heavy sleeping van tickets.
Mm-hmm.
That's supposed to already been done.
Right. Well, so I brought this up to, as you probably heard,
nothing new that they have to reintroduce.
You heard me talk about this with manager Dick Wilson.
They just follow their own their own votes.
Well, since they're not doing this, I think this is a very key issue in which a lot of people can unite, because even if you don't favor safe sleeping zones, you certainly favor. Cholera-free zones, right? I mean,
I understand mitigation efforts would need to be take place. That's why we voted a year and a half ago to have the porta potties put in where the heavy sleeping tickets are circulated.
Right.
You know where they're at.
So that's why I'm hoping that Huff and Roar, maybe the campaign to end the sleeping ban that you're working with, can all unite and maybe starting to use this as an issue.
We need to bring Nana Ruiz in this. Obviously, she wants to be a player, and I think she's going to be an effective player.
Residentes Unidos, yeah.
Michael Hernandez needs to be challenged, and he's obviously, since he and Vasquez and Mike Rotkin are the ones that sent the press release to San Francisco Chronicle that got nationwide, we have no camping ban. You can sleep anywhere on the sidewalk, anywhere, any of the streets, anywhere. This is what Rotkin did, and they sat there on June 13th when one of the residents on the west side said, is this what you guys said? You instructed the police officers to not enforce drug laws, not enforce sanitation laws. Did you really do this? They let Rotkin answer for them?
It's interesting that I talked to Rotkin today, by the way. I ran into him at the council offices, and I said...
Yeah, well, tell him to put rent control on the ballot and leave us alone.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I asked him about this, you know, whether he had a copy of Vasquez's press release. Did you ever get that, by the way?
No, but I am in communication with that reporter.
Maybe we can get a copy of that.
I can get her a statement from her.
Rotkin has agreed to go on free radio, but I'm wondering if we even want him, so we'll be thinking about that. He's agreed to go on a week from Sunday.
John Laird promised me over and over and over again that I'm supposed to be on his show to talk about either the provisional safe sleeping zones or decriminalization of sleep, whichever. And he basically has been, along with Marty Warmhart, working to get the sheriffs to drive all the homeless people into the city and campaigning. The same people that advise these guys not to run as a slate are the same people that are telling them, if you do this, you're going to lose the progressive election.
Mm.
And so why should they be even listening to these assholes?
You're talking,
they're the ones that are going to lose the election.
You're talking about Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar in the last election.
Yeah, they won as running as a slate, but they were advised by Marty Warmhart and John Laird and the Darlings and so forth. Oh, if you do this, it'll just, you know, you'll all go down. Then we won't have any progressive majority.
Mm-hmm.
That same people who gave that advice didn't want them to win in the first place. And now they're giving this advice to them, and you know, they shouldn't be listening to them at all. They shouldn't even be trusting them. As a matter of fact, I believe the Darlings are being run out of the People's Democratic Club as we speak.
I understand there is an election tonight on that issue.
And yay, Ed Porter. Go Ed Porter.
Any other notes you want to press on with David at this point?
Well, I just wanted to, you know, I was going to call you before I turned the show on, because I'm basically sending out 300 emails to people. You need to know that the emails for no safe sleeping zones and for no decriminalization of sleep are outnumbering us 8-1.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Every one of you send to citycouncil@santa-cruz.cs.us.
CA.us.
That's CA for California. .us. Send them a message. You know, decriminalize sleeping now. If the people are worried about it, let them put safe sleeping zones on the ballot. You know, or put safe sleeping zones on the ballot for them. Divide the opposition. Let them fight over whether or not they want safe sleeping zones, because decriminalization of sleep will win by 70%. I don't think it should have to go to the ballot, Robert. I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
And Catherine Byers is the target for getting it done by the city council. And it should be a city council with a conscience would do this. And I'm trying to get these three guys to at least vote a token vote, so they could separate themselves from these false progressives, from these liberals, these boogeyman politics liberals that have been running this town for so long.
They better.
And now that we've begun to get a stronghold, they shouldn't back off now.
I guess there's nothing on the agenda. I see nothing on the agenda.
Well, the homeless resource officer was something that was actually part of the the setup of the provisional safe zone.
More cops.
Now, because they were supposed to actually be doing service to distinguish, to give pamphlets, and this pamphlet that Michael Schmidt was talking about, that was supposed to have been done 3 weeks ago.
Interesting.
That was supposed to be done 3 weeks ago.
Well, this is,
and it was not done today because I was out there and no one's received it.
It's a pension program for Officer Seeley. Now they got Eric Seeley retiring, they got his son in a new position.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And it's hopefully going to be two homeless resource officers. But why, if they don't have a safe sleeping zone now to do it? Now all they're going to do is a homeless harassment officer.
Well, that's useful. I'm sure that the folks out there who are the business people will get off on that.
We've been betrayed, and the people that we shouldn't have trusted, that we didn't trust in the last election, the Marty Warmhouse, the John Laird,